Have you ever been 40 miles from your destination when the engine sounds just a little different? Not stopped, not rough, just slightly off. I'm Pattern on Radio Hanger, and this is Traffic Pattern. That question is exactly where we're starting today. Before we get into it, quick shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the training journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, commercial certificate, they have a coin for each one. Great way to mark the milestones that actually mean something. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Alright, the precautionary landing here is something I wish someone had explained to me early in training, before the word precautionary got mixed in with everything else and lost its weight. In aviation, we have two kinds of off-plan landings. There is the forced landing, where the decision gets made for you because you have no other option. And there is the precautionary landing, where you make the decision yourself before it becomes forced. The Airman Certification Standards address precautionary landings under emergency operations. Your examiner wants to know that you understand the difference between those two scenarios. More importantly, the examiner wants to know that you understand which one a competent pilot prefers. The forced landing is a last resort. The precautionary landing is judgment. And judgment, it turns out, is the hard part. Let's go back to that scenario I opened with, 40 miles from your destination. Engine sounds different, gauge is in the green, 20 minutes of fuel above your reserve. Your destination has a full fixed base operator and a mechanic who actually answers the phone. Most student pilots, and honestly a lot of certificated pilots, will continue to their destination. They will rationalize it. The gauges are fine, it is probably nothing. I have been flying this plane for years. I just want to get home. That last one is the dangerous one. I just want to get home has its own gravitational pull, and it will bend your decision-making around it whether you realize it or not. The National Transportation Safety Board, or NTSB, has documented this pattern across hundreds of accident reports. The engine gave a warning. The pilot noticed. The pilot continued. The engine failed before the destination. And because the pilot was 40 miles from the intended airport, with the best forced landing terrain already behind them, the options at that point were all bad. Now contrast that with a different version of the same flight. Engine sounds different. Pilot notices. Pilot calls approach control and says there is an engine anomaly and requests a divert to the nearest airport with maintenance. Lands uneventfully. The mechanic finds a loose exhaust connection or a spark plug on its way out. Pilot flies home the next day. That second story does not make the news. Nobody writes it up. No NTSB report. No accident statistics. The pilot made a good decision, lived with a small inconvenience, and flew home safer. That is what the precautionary landing looks like 99 times out of 100. Let's walk through this together, because the Airman Certification Standards ask you to demonstrate proficiency in emergency operations, and the precautionary landing is absolutely part of that conversation. But what the check ride tests as a maneuver is really just a narrow slice of what the concept means in actual flying. The precautionary landing starts long before you're ever in the airplane. Here's the framework I use when I brief students before long cross-countries, and I think every pilot should run through some version of this before every flight. You are going to identify your out at every phase of the flight. Before departure, what would make you not go? An engine anomaly during run-up. Weather at the destination below your personal minimums, wind significantly beyond your comfort level. These are your pre-departure outs. Most pilots think about these at least a little. Once airborne, what would make you land somewhere other than your destination? This is where most pilots go completely blank. They never ask the question before they are in the situation. And the problem with building that list when you're 40 miles out with a funny-sounding engine is that you are now doing risk assessment under stress. Stress is a terrible pilot, so you make the list on the ground. For me, on a typical visual flight rules cross-country, that list sounds something like this. Any unexplained engine anomaly, any oil pressure or temperature exceedance, even a brief one, any unfamiliar smell, smoke, or fumes in the cockpit. Fuel burn that is 10% or more above expected and cannot be explained by the conditions. Weather at the destination that has dropped below my personal minimums, a temporary flight restriction or TFR that significantly affects routing. Fatigue or physical condition that makes me question my own judgment. That is not exhaustive. Every flight is different. But you see the structure. You're writing your personal minimums into the flight before it happens. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association Air Safety Institute and the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, have both pointed to personal minimums cards as a concrete tool for exactly this kind of pre-flight thinking. You write down your thresholds before you're ever in a situation where your emotions are invested in the outcome. Because here is what happens when you do not have that list. You get airborne. You hit one of those conditions, and now your brain is doing two jobs at once. It is managing the aircraft, and it is deciding whether this situation clears the bar for a significant course change. While it is doing both of those things, it is also telling you a story. The story goes like this. You are almost there. The destination has great fuel prices. Your family is expecting you. You have never had a problem with this plane. The mechanic just looked at it. The gauges are fine. That story is very good at its job, and here is what the human factors research shows. The longer you continue past the point where the rational answer would have been to divert, the harder it becomes to make the divert decision. Every additional minute of flight feels like evidence that you were right to continue. The human factors literature calls this commitment bias, and it is a documented factor in accident chains across general aviation. The Airman Certification Standards, specifically in the Aeronautical Decision-Making section, call for pilots to demonstrate risk management and the use of a systematic approach to assess and mitigate risk. The word systematic is doing a lot of work there. Systematic means you had a system before the risk appeared. Not that you improvised when things got uncomfortable. Let me walk through a scenario that comes up in training and one I have seen play out personally. A student is on a solo cross-country, about 30 miles from the destination airport. They notice the oil temperature has been slowly creeping upward for the past 15 minutes. It is still in the green, but noticeably higher than it was at cruise altitude. They think maybe it is the warmer air at lower altitude, maybe the cowl flaps need adjusting. They cannot decide if this is a problem or just normal variation. They continue. They land at the destination. Temperature is high in the green, but not in the red. They tell me about it after the flight. Here's what I said. That was the right outcome, but not the right reasoning. You got lucky that the temperature stabilized. What you should have done was apply the rule. An unexplained upward trend in any engine parameter means we treat it as real until proven otherwise. You had a suitable airport behind you when the trend started. That was your out. When the trend continued and you still could not explain it, that was your divert trigger. The student asked me, what if it was nothing? What if they diverted and wasted 2 hours for a loose oil filler cap? My answer is this. You want that to be the worst outcome you ever have. You want wasted 2 hours to be your definition of a bad day. Because the alternative in that specific scenario was an engine that threw a rod 30 miles from the airport over terrain with limited forced landing options. The precautionary landing costs you time, sometimes money, and sometimes a little embarrassment. The forced landing costs all of those things, plus it adds the possibility of property damage, serious injury, and fatalities. This should be a straightforward trade. And yet pilots make the wrong call regularly, because the cost of the precautionary landing is immediate and certain, and the cost of the forced landing is uncertain and feels unlikely in the moment. Our brains are not well built for evaluating uncertain future costs against certain present ones. This is not a character flaw. This is how human cognition works. And knowing that the bias exists is the first step toward overriding it when it matters. Now let's talk about the fuel scenario specifically, because this is where I see pilots get into trouble more often than almost anywhere else. You planned the flight with a 45-minute reserve. Your ground speed has been about 15 knots slower than the morning winds aloft forecast suggested. You have been airborne for 2 hours. You have 30 minutes of fuel remaining instead of 45. You have 25 miles to your destination. The math looks okay. Probably. Probably is the wrong word to use around fuel. The question you need to ask is not whether you can make your destination. The question is what happens if you cannot. If the answer is, I land at the airport, I am flying over right now while I still have 15 minutes of fuel, then you're in a reasonable position. If the answer is, I keep going and hope, then you have already made the wrong decision and you might not know it yet. Fuel stops have a bad reputation in the culture of general aviation flying. There is an unspoken pressure to push through, to not need the extra stop. To be the pilot who planned it right the first time and did not have to deviate. That pressure is real, and it has contributed to accidents that should never have happened. The pilot who stops for fuel 20 minutes early is not a bad planner. That pilot is a safe one. Let's talk about the actual mechanics of the precautionary landing, because the Airman Certification Standards will test you on this in a practical setting. In the check ride context, the examiner will typically ask you to demonstrate a precautionary landing at an off-airport site, like a farm field or a straight stretch of road. The task includes selecting the site, evaluating the surface, making at least one low pass to assess conditions, and then executing the landing. The low pass is critical. Do not skip it. One of the most common errors in precautionary landing scenarios is committing to a field after one evaluation from altitude and then discovering on short final that the surface is softer than it looked, or that there are irrigation furrows running perpendicular to your intended direction, or that there is a fence you missed. The low pass is your second look. Fly the length of the field at low altitude. Note the wind direction from surface indicators like crop movement or smoke. Check for obstacles. Assess any slope. Then commit. Then fly a proper pattern. Not a desperate dive to the ground. A pattern. The pattern is what gives you options. If something changes on final, the altitude and airspeed built into a proper pattern give you room to adjust. A rushed, abbreviated approach takes those options away before you even know you needed them. And communicate. On 122.8, or whatever frequency is appropriate for your location, call your position and intentions. If you can reach a controller, let someone know where you're going. Let the safety net know you need it. Here's something the examiner is specifically watching for in this scenario. Are you flying the airplane first? Are you managing the emergency, or is the emergency managing you? The pilot who is task saturated will let the aircraft wander while scanning for a field. The pilot with a system will set a configuration, note the altitude and airspeed, establish a search pattern, evaluate options methodically, and then commit to one aircraft, first, then problem, then solution. That sequence is the answer. Let me close with one more scenario, because it illustrates something that gets missed. You are 120 miles from home, visual flight rules, midpoint of a cross country. Your weather at the destination is still good, but the system that was trailing you from the northwest has moved in faster than forecast, and the area you departed from this morning is now solidly in instrument flight rules conditions. You are not instrument rated, you have fuel for your destination with an hour of reserve. Is this a precautionary landing situation? The instinct says no, the engine is running perfectly, the gauges are all in the green, the weather ahead is clear, you have fuel. By every traditional measure, this looks like a normal flight, but here's what changed. Your abort option is gone, you cannot turn around, the weather behind you has closed that door, you are now committed to reaching your destination because your destination is the only viable option within reach, and that means anything that now threatens it, an unexpected airspace conflict, a mechanical problem, your destination weather deteriorating faster than forecast, has no fallback. That is a significant shift in your risk profile. You have gone from a flight with multiple outs to a flight with exactly one, and when a flight has only one out, anything that jeopardizes that out becomes far more serious. The decision to land at a suitable airport now while you still have good conditions and still have choices is absolutely on the table. It may or may not be the right call, but it is a valid call that a lot of pilots would never even consider because the flight is otherwise going fine. Here's something I wish someone told me early in training. The best decisions in aviation often look like overreactions at the time. The pilot who diverts for weather that never fully materialized, the one who lands short when the fuel math started looking thin, the one who canceled for a mechanical that turned out to be minor. Those pilots look overly cautious in the moment. Over a career, those pilots build a record of nothing happening, which is exactly what you want your record to look like. The NTSB data, the AOPA Air Safety Institute accident case studies, and the FAA's own safety literature all tell the same story. The accident pilots almost always had an out. They almost always had a moment where the precautionary choice was available, and they almost always continued. What we are building in training is the reflex that takes that out when the conditions warrant it, not the reflex that continues because continuing feels like the default. Thanks to the NTSB Accident Database and the AOPA Air Safety Institute for the research behind today's show. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern Fly the Airplane First. I will see you next time.